This is Iya Samba, writer of episode 810, Dr. Lakin Perlos. You're listening to the Black Licks Exposed on Golden Spiral Media.
True story, 1 hour before recording this very podcast, I thought Aaron suffocated from paralysis. Welcome, everyone, to the award-winning The Blacklist Exposed podcast. I'm Agent Troy Heinrichs.
He didn't sacrifice himself for me. And I'm Agent Aaron Peterson. And Troy, I know your pain, mostly because it's me. Thank you for joining us yet again for number 70 on The Blacklist, Dr. Lakin Perlos, written by Iya Samba and directed by Phil Bernstein. Showing us another intel for this episode of The Blacklist Exposed can be found at theblacklistexposed.com.
First off, if you're new to the podcast, welcome. We basically have a very easy, simple format to follow. We cover off on some stuff from last week, what we call our profiling question of the week. Then we go ahead and get into this week's discussion for Dr. Lakin Perlos. And then we move into a little story time with Red Reddington himself in Red's Rhetoric. And then all of your notes in Special Agent Intel at the end of the episode. But we asked all of you last week, what do you think this 30-year plan is for Red? And we asked you to get a little creative. So what did the fans say?
Douglas Bumgardner, to learn Colonel Sanders' original 7 herbs and spices and get his hands on the original recipe. We know how big a foodie Red is. Would KFC be counted as food right now anymore?
I don't know. Not if it's advertising during The Walking Dead. Kyle Nolan making a network TV show.
Damn. You're saying The Blacklist is going to last 30 years? It's possible at this point. They keep renewing it.
They do.
Yeah. Kay Horner, hitting every fine dining and drinks establishment in the world.
That would take a long time. Agree.
That would.
Phil Houghton said, unlock the secret to folding a fitted sheet. It is challenging.
It is challenging. Greg Alterton, Soviet style 5-year plan relaunched 6 times. Agreed, comrade.
That's funny. I don't know. I love it so hard at that one. Brian Dalton said to build a freaking laser on the freaking moon. It's called the Alan Parsons Project.
Keegan Farley, perfecting a hairspray formula for wrestlers' hair and makeup team. It's perfect. There is no need for perfection.
And then Cherie Carter said, trying to solve whatever medical issue he has.
Yeah, that makes me wonder, at the end here, was that because of the torture or was that because of medical conditions? I assume it's the torture, but...
Oh, like when he was with Dembe at the end of the episode? I think that was like just recovery period. Yeah. Nurse him back to health.
You don't see that often for TV characters, you know? They just bounce right back. Ah, just a little torture. I'm good.
Yeah, a couple Band-Aids under the chin. You're all fine. Mm-hmm.
Leslie Ann, I think maybe the 30-year project is finding out the secrets hidden in Liz's head, maybe?
I suppose if you did a mind altercation, that could be possible. But Martina Scopes says that it surely Liz is the 30-year project.
Oh, well, she's 30. She was 31 when the show started, I think, if my math serves me right. So, could be.
But if he didn't come into her life until she was 4, then do some math. It might work.
It could work. It could work. Lastly, James Dean. To answer last week's profile question would take a genius. All we know, whoever he is, he was a traitor to the USSR up to 1991. If he was involved, would have been a KGB agent, then for a short time was involved in the SVR. Had to be one of the two. It was not until 1995 the agency became the FSB. When he went under the knife, he went somewhere. He was somewhere around 30 years old. I may be wrong, but I think we have a contradiction. Did he not mention to Dembe that he did not have a plan? Yeah, he didn't have a plan, but he's got a project. So, you know what? A project isn't necessarily a detailed layout or plan. It's more of, here's the intent. Let's see if we can get there.
Or when Red said he didn't have a plan, he meant specifically for how to deal with Liz in the situation that they're in right now.
Yeah, because he's like, I didn't know we were going to get season 8. It was weird.
Or 9 for that matter.
Yeah, or 9 for that matter. So question for next week. This is the, because we didn't really get anything hard hitting we could use this week. What's your score of the season so far from 1 to 5?
Five being
the best.
Five being the best. Okay.
Like 5 stars.
Gotta clarify. You know, some people like golf.
I understand. I understand.
All right. Well, before someone sticks a fork up our necks, let's go ahead and get into this week's case profile.
And we should mention there's no episode on March 19th, correct?
That is next week. Yes. Blacklist returns in 2 weeks. 2 weeks. And Aaron will not be here. Rory will be here that week filling in.
That's right. I will be gone. South by Southwest is coming up next week, and plus some other stuff going on. So you guys have a wonderful, I can't wait to listen to Rory's ideas of what's going on.
Which I feel bad for you because it is still virtual this year, even though Texas has no mask laws and it's like a free open realm down there. So they could have held it in Austin.
Nope. Don't feel bad for me. I'm good with this. This is a good solution. I think it's still a little early for something like that. Plus, the virtual is actually very cool this year. They've made a lot of changes. It's pretty neat. And you still get limited seats for certain showings. So you still get to tell your friends you got into a movie they didn't.
You get to watch like 5 movies at one time, like all of the doctor's patients did this week.
You can.
How many TVs does Neville really need? Like, is he that full of himself?
He seemed to be. I think he seemed to be. Well, we open in Berlin, Germany, with a man who was obviously drugged or induced to be kidnapped by fake paramedics. It was actually pretty cool because and then the real paramedic showed up and everybody's like, what? That was a nice little fake out. Well, it turns out he's a cartel runner who was kidnapped by Laverne Cox's Dr. Lakem Perillos, the Brazen Bull. Basically, Townsend's Brimley. Would you agree?
Yeah, only with a little more fetish to it, I guess. She seemed like she enjoyed dealing out the pain a little bit.
Yeah, I like how they kind of painted it as though she's a masochist. And how far-fetched and how awful she is, you know, based on what she did to the throat guy. But what I was cracking up, I'm like, Red's done the same thing. I mean, Brimley's always showing up with a goat. I don't know what's different about that. I mean, I don't know. Well, anyway,
to be clear, we do not want to offend the llamas out there, but I'm pretty sure it's a llama.
Is it a llama?
It's a lot bigger than a goat.
It, whatever it is, it's weird. It's weird. And I've always wanted to see exactly what's going on there. You know, what's he eating? Exactly. Specifically. Well, he uses a heretic's fork, which is a tool used in the Spanish Inquisition to break human spirits. It's a delight. It jams up into your gullet. Your throat, right? It's more, yeah. Where's it?
Like your gullet, like your Adam's apple.
Oh, man. It's just very uncomfortable. And just starts stretching and stretching, and it looks really horribly painful. They actually find a character who lived through it. This is the only person known that lived through it. It was left alive 6 years ago as a warning. That's our window into how savage Perillos is. And I'm assuming it's a warning to not eat lunch before you look at what she did to him, because they used CGI for that one, and it was a very grotesque shot. Now, I don't know about you, Trev, where you stand on that, but I like the shot. It's a very quick cutaway, so it does just enough to make you a little squeamish. I wish it was a physical effect, though, because I love gross, grotesque physical effects. They always stand out to me more than CGI. It still looked good. It just, I think a nice physical effect.
You think it was CGI? Cool.
Yes, I do. Yeah.
I mean, I watched it on my phone. So to me, it almost looked practical on my phone just because it's a smaller screen.
On your phone. Well, yeah, on your phone, I'm sure probably did. Probably looked like, wow, that's real.
I was like, hey, Pepe, good job. That was impressive.
I don't think it was Pepe, though. I think it was CGI.
I think it was CGI. But it was a good job, though. Like when the camera panned around the monitor, I was like, dude, that guy's jaw is missing. That's awesome. We haven't seen that in the Blacklist in a long time.
And if I was him, I would just, you know, I don't know. I would help them do whatever they needed to do to find her.
Yeah, that's vengeance. What I would do. Vengeance is key.
Oh, man. I'm telling you, as much as I could get. Well, Red is followed to Max and then ambushed. Well, we come to find out because Max was the one that threw him out under the bus.
Damn you, Rudiger. Damn you.
And Dembe's taken. This is their overall plot. And he's taken by Perullos, whose mother was given a misdiagnosis that left her bedridden simply because of her skin color. Now, we're gonna come back to that because I do find it to be a huge factor of this episode. What did you think overall of Perullos in terms of as a blacklister? Because here's where I sit with this episode. I don't think a whole lot happened in terms of story progression, right? Like, it's not something where I think our mythology really took a big leap forward or any leap forward, really. I feel like it was just a fun episode. But I really enjoyed this one. I thought it was a good blacklister, good tension. The Dembe was great. It was wonderful seeing Hisham get more of a centerpiece because we're always hoping he gets more episode. That's where I sit with it, where I don't feel like character-wise, mythology-wise, we didn't make a huge leap forward, but I did love what we got from the Dembe-Red relationship and the tension of the actual episode.
Yeah, and I think for me, this one was just exciting because it felt different. It almost felt, I'm trying to think of the word, like operatic. It felt like there was an undertone to this episode. I mean, clearly a lot of discussion about pain and suffering, maybe a little depression even. There was just some dark, dark undertones with this episode. And then just having that great like buddy moment where Red goes to save Dembe and gives himself up for Dembe. And then Dembe gives up himself to come save Red. I mean, I thought that was a really good testament to their relationship and how things shook out between them after all the troubles that they've had in the past, especially in season 6. And as far as the overall blacklister goes, I thought she was creepy. I thought she was cool. I think that it was probably more reminiscent of just a one-offer, like the Deer Hunter or one of those like mid-season 2, like the Forecaster. You know, mm-hmm. It's kind of like one of those standalone fill-in-the-blanks rather than progress the story forward, other than we get to see Neville Townsend again, and we know that there's something having to do with Townsend's family, much like there's something to do with Red's family. So I think there were like some nuggets in this episode, but I think it was really more about the pain. I think pain was the theme and trying to understand.
You think?
Yeah.
What was your first indication? The constant mention of pain being the theme?
But I think it was more pain like we don't see, like Red's yep. pain or and Neville's pain. And what is that pain? That's the question I think that they're posing us with this week is what is the pain they're suffering with in order to keep this 30-year war going at this point?
I guess I could see that. I thought it was more about unseen pain. You know, there's a lot of racial discussion, both from Dembe and from Perullos, and it seemed mostly from Perullos, but also, you know, they referred to it twice in the show where Dembe reflected on, does Red know my pain? And he said he did at one point, and then later when Red flat out asked him, he says, no, you don't. And I think that's the pain of being a black man and trying to navigate the world and the differences, because, you know, he comes from a place of privilege and Dembe comes from a different place and he can't understand that, which I think is the indication that I got from it, which is when Red flat out asked him, do you think I know your pain? And he said, no, I don't. And he can't, you know, as much as you might emulate or empathize, it's not the same thing as actually living that scenario. So that's what I took away from it. It was very much a comment on as much as you feel like you can understand a situation, there is something said for you'll never understand unless you're actually in those shoes. And that's the difference. And that's why Perullos can't really change course because she's so stuck on what she believes because of what she's undergone or what her mother underwent. And Dembe understands, but still knows that you just can't get it. As much as you want to, you can't get it.
Right.
That's what I took. So we also got some much needed information in terms of why does Neville want something so bad? We don't know the why so much, but we do know what he wants so bad. He really, 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 really wants that Sikorsky archive. Why does he want it so bad?
And why has he been chasing it for 30 years?
No, I'm asking you. Why does he want it so bad? Do you know?
I'm assuming that there has to be something with either agents' names that he needs or secret plans for some project or company that he was running that basically got put aside or taken down, or maybe it all ties back into something in Russia, some bombing that happened that we talked about with Berlin, right? Maybe it all comes back to that. Lots of potential possibilities, and I think that's the one thing that's keeping the Blacklist interesting right now, is that we kind of don't know what he's looking for at this point. We just know that there is this archive thing out there, and I know that by the end of the season, we're probably going to get an answer about it. So we're just here for the ride at this point.
Yeah, it feels like that's the overall season arc to a degree, right? Like trying to identify and find the Sikorsky archive. Obviously, in other things, but that's like a big component. Well, animal brokers are out there, those bastards. And that's how Ram finds out who Lakin Perillos is. And we get a lot of, like you said, commentary on pain in this episode. Without pain, there can be no real pleasure. Red is a very big pain advocate. And then Dembe finds Max and implores him to tell him where Red is, or he's going to inflict a little bit more pain his way, and ties him to a radiator, which is wonderful, and saves Red. Also ends up in a punching bag. That was a great scenario. That was that was a great switch. I'm like, why are we watching him do a punching session right now? Is he training? Was there a Rocky montage going to happen here? Sure enough, he's in the body bag. Or he's in the bag. I thought that was a great twist. I like that a lot.
Yeah, because right before that, they're like, they're here. You need to come downstairs. And you're like, wait, I thought he was meeting somebody. Why is he boxing? Yeah.
Sure did. So I'm like, confused. Who's they? Who's they? I thought that, is that Liz and her compatriots? I mean, what's going on? And
it turns out it was just the guys bringing Max to Neville that they were meeting.
Wow. So that's overall what happened in this episode. We do have a few more character things, but that's the gist of it. So you enjoyed this one, right? We agree?
Yeah. I think this was a lot of like throwback season one, season two type Blacklist. We had a creepy blacklister. We had, instead of a giant soapy beard guy, we had a giant missing jaw guy. And then we had...
We had a blacklister with something behind, a method to the madness. You know, there's a reason why she was the way she was, which, you know, often it's just, that's part of the business, or it's to make money or something. And like, this is actually morally implored in her mind. Yeah,
more like the season one Blacklist was like a Frederick Barnes. Like he's doing it in order to save his kid. Or the other guy, not the apothecary, but the guy that was breaking people's bones the way he was abused by his mother and it made his mother watch in the wheelchair.
Oh, right. Oh, that was a good one.
Yeah. So it felt like that, where like the Blacklister had some deep, dark motive or something that drove her to be this way.
Personal motivation.
Yeah. Which that was really cool. And then, of course, the body bag thing was just a cool Blacklist twist. It was like, that's awesome.
All right, let's get into the rest of the characters that we have.
We bet. We open up the show this week with a great tune, a little bit of techno dance. The song is called Wah Wah Wallenstein from D. Wilde Jagged. And then as Red is meeting inside the laundromat, we actually hear Summer Winds by Rob Kirk. And then there's also a great operatic piece, choral, at the end of the episode. I did not get a chance to find that one out. But if we do find out after the recording of this podcast, they will all be on the playlists over for Apple Music and Spotify. You can get links to both of those over at theblacklistexposed.com.
Okay, now this is where we jump into the rest of the characters and anything that happened to them specifically that really took the episode or the mythology to a different place. Park Wrestler Aram didn't really do a whole lot this episode. You agree? I mean, I don't think really we got anything too worth noting from those three.
Yeah, nothing special. Aram, maybe a little bit when you get the, like, Liz wouldn't do that. That's not Liz. Come on. Really? Riley? Come on. That's not Liz. I was like, dude, you just saw her kill a person in front of you. Like, don't play the Doughy Boyd season one Aram anymore.
one thing, because I was so enraptured in our debate last week, I forgot to bring up the code situation. Do they not change the codes on occasion when agents go rogue at the post office? Or do they just let them, you know what? It's much easier just to leave the codes the same. You know what I'm saying? Because they're still using Keen's codes. I don't know if that really made a lot of sense.
Because they used Keen's code to get to Chemical Mary.
Yeah.
But then the codes did switch when it went into lockdown. That's why Wrestler had to put in the code.
Right. It was kind of funny. I meant to bring it up last week. I totally forgot. But anyway, that's last week's. Go listen to that.
Yeah, you would think they would have changed the codes from when Liz was there picking up Agnes when Aram was playing The Floor is Lava.
Yep. Like,
wouldn't you have changed the codes then?
It reminded me of an old anecdote with George Clooney, where for a long time, when he was single, not, you know, after he got married, he did it, changed it or something like that. And I think he was just on a podcast where he talked about this too. But he, his gate code was 1234. And just because he wasn't going to live in fear, you know, his whole life or whatever. But I just thought that, I always thought that was funny. I'm like, you're a sought after celebrity and your gate code is 1234. I think that's fantastic.
That's the code of my luggage.
It's good to know. Good to know. Well, Cooper does get something to do. He mentions that an arrest warrant has been issued for Liz, and that's what he's focused on, finding Liz and arresting her. And they find a way to tie it into what Red wants, because that's ultimately they want the same thing.
Find Neville, find Liz. Mm-hmm. Makes sense.
Yeah. But you can tell where his priorities are. His priorities are to bring Liz in. And, you know, Red thought that was a mistake. But, no, Red, I mean, that would be a mistake to ignore the fact that she's murdering people.
What I find interesting is that this is, what, episode 2 or 3 since Cooper has unlocked the flash drive and hasn't, like, taken any action on the flash drive itself.
Yeah. And he's in there. He knows, maybe it's taking him a while to decrypt it.
Maybe.
He's waiting for his cereal box decoder ring so he can get to work. He's waiting for Dembe, because Dembe, you know, apparently can make a very good agent. I like this mention of Dembe would make a good cop. Because he lets Dembe help on the case, and he hints that Dembe would make a good cop. He actually talks about it straight up. I wonder if this is, like, foreshadowing, do you think? That maybe he could be an agent after Red is gone or moves on or something?
Well, we know that Red probably won't move on since season 9 is coming.
Well, no, I know that. Yes, I know that. But that feels like a seed. Do you agree? Did you feel like that was a seed for future? Oh, yeah.
There would be some point where Dembe would be part of the task force.
Mm-hmm.
I think we kind of had that at one point, too, earlier, where Dembe was involved with the task force trying to find somebody who was like 2 episodes where he was really working directly with Wrestler and with Aram and with Cooper. I can't remember what season that was, but I know it was short-lived. It was like 2 episodes.
Well, it came back, and that would be kind of cool. I don't know if you can make that work if
maybe,
someone who...
Maybe it's a different angle. Maybe it's, hey, Dembe, I know some stuff. You know some stuff. Maybe you
together.
Could play like a double agent here and keep me abreast of what's going on with Red, and we'll take care of you if you help us out.
I like that. I don't think he would do that, but I like it. He's obviously got, because he's playing the what are you going to do when Red goes away card. Don't you want to help people and stop making everything about him? Don't you want that? I feel like that's what Cooper was going for. He's like, I can give you a new life. But speaking of Dembe, let's move in. He's straight up tortured. And, you know, we talked about the pain thing. I'm going to come back to what the discussion was about. But Dembe escapes too late. He also figures out that Red was set up by Max. And I wonder when he goes back for, do you think that Red was turning himself in for him or to save himself, like was being asserted by
Laverne? I think it could go a couple different ways. I think...
Well, I asked you a question, like, what do you think is what I'm asking?
I think truly he turned himself in for Dembe.
Okay.
He's like, take me, let Dembe live. But I think Red always has an alternative motive. And I think he was probably overplaying his hand, if you will, maybe a little cocky, thinking I'll save Dembe, but this will also get me closer to Neville, which will then, of course, get me closer to Liz. So he took it as more of a calculated risk that he'd be able to get away with it.
Right. Right. Okay. I agree. I was just wondering if you saw it that way. And I did like how, you know, Dembe made mention that, yeah, would Townsend do the same thing for you? No. or was that Red that said that? Whoever said it.
Yeah, Dembe said it to Perillos.
Yes.
Because they were torturing her the same way.
Exactly. Well, he tortures her and leaves her for the post office. He actually does not think Red sees his pain, not always. And that's where you get the discussion on race dynamics, I'm thinking. And one thing I enjoyed about that was, you know, I remember, was it last season or the season before, where they had several episodes that were very pointed in terms of a political ideology or a discussion of some sort, you know, a hot button topic of some sort. And it was too on the nose. You know, they had the Dirty Cop episode and a couple other ones, and they were just too on the nose with like ideology, where this feels like a very, very subtle undercurrent of a real discussion, but kind of told a little bit more organically throughout the episode. I really enjoyed how they utilized that in this episode.
The other thing that could be happening here too, not to take away from the racial conversation, because I think it absolutely was, mm-hmm. but I think there's also a pain that Red can't understand in Dembe in his loyalty and like what it costs Dembe to be as loyal as he is to Red, because Red will never understand how to be in that position where he's so indebted because somebody saved him, right, from the Mabasa cartel, and then be as loyal as he has been to Red. Like, Red could never understand what Dembe has sacrificed for him all these years.
Yeah, it could work that way too. Sure. It could work multiple ways. Maybe I'm reading too much into it. Either way, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a good conversation.
Well, there was definitely a race dynamic undertone. I mean,
well, yeah, there was, because she was it was very prominent in Perillos's.
Yeah. No one can character. Understand what you and I have gone through, Dembe, and
yeah. A lot of connections there. Well, Red apparently dropped acid with Allen Ginsberg, who's a poet. He's a poet, if you didn't know. So that was interesting. Finds Bobby, who's stealing from Townsend, to induces him to tell him where his money goes. And that's kind of how he's trying to get to Townsend. Like, that's the whole goal, is to get to Townsend, basically to get to Liz. That's what he's trying to do. And we do get some comments from Red. One thing was, he said, Katerina Rostova killed your family and I killed her.
That's a pretty clear line.
Felt like a clear line, didn't it?
Sure did.
Sure did.
Felt like a dagger. I felt a lot of pain in that line.
Do you feel like that was pretty direct and to the point? Like, that was Katerina Rostova? Or that's just the representation of Katerina Rostova in terms of it was a double agent?
I mean, the way he delivered that line was pretty straightforward and pretty daggery. Like, let me put it to you straight, Neville. Here's what it is. And I was like, ugh. Like, I don't like that line. Take that line out of the show.
I don't like anything that goes against what I think. I don't like it. Yeah, I like that line. It was pretty direct. I'm like, I hope that's so true. I really just do. I do. Well, Red gives himself up for Dembe. We talked about that. And vice versa. It works both ways. And you had a William Wadsworth quote you wanted to talk about.
Yeah, right at the, as he's talking to Neville, he says this line that, thoughts that do often lie too deep for tears. It's actually from a poem of the same name. And I'll give you the little bit of the verse here. Goes something like this. It's talking about nature and how William Wadsworth enjoyed nature when he was a younger kid. There was a time when meadow, grove, and stream, the earth, and every common sight, to me did seem apparelled in celestial light, the glory and the freshness of a dream. It is not now as it hath been of yore. Turn whoe'er say I may, by night or day. The things which I have seen, I now can see no more. And O ye fountains, meadows, hills, and groves, forbode not any serving of our loves. Yet in my heart of hearts I feel your might. I only have relinquished one delight, to live beneath your more habitual sway. I love the brooks which down their channels fret, even more than when I tripped lightly as they. The innocent brightness of a newborn day is lovely yet. The clouds that gather around the setting sun do take a sober coloring from an eye that hath kept watch o'er man's mortality. Another race hath been, and other palms are won. Thanks to the human heart by which we live, thanks to its tenderness, its joys and fears, to me the meanest flower that blows can give thoughts that do often lie too deep for tears. Which is the line that Red says at the end. And I think this was a telling poem for this story, because the line read quotes, I think, has two interpretations. One is that we can weep at the sight of even the ugliest part of nature because his tears have been repressed. Like, he comes from a background where he has been taught that it's like unmanly or uncouth to weep, from his upbringing as a child.
Or that's a common theme too.
Right. Or the second, I think, which is more what we're dealing with here, especially as we continue through the episode and as he goes through his pain, the second interpretation is that there's something deeper, like a profound sorrow or maybe even a depression, that even if he were to cry about it, the pain is so great that the tears would not give him any relief. And I think that goes right into the kind of Mexican cavefish story. Like, could he ever see the light again? Could he ever go find his way home? So I think there's a deeper thing there that he can never overcome.
All right. I didn't know we were getting poems from Troy this week.
Snaps.
Yep. All I know is, like, roses are red, violets are blue. Troy's ugly. You know this is true.
And so are you.
So are you. Ah, that was better. I should have went with that. All right, well, we learned the red is terribly ticklish. That's funny. That's a good little... Somebody put that in a Wicca.
And then he laughed. I was like, somewhere. Oh, he actually carried through with the line. That's awesome.
Yeah. Let's see. One line I really liked. This is going to make killing you infinitely more pleasurable. I really like that line. Let's see. So one thing that when he got doped up, I was just waiting for another bombshell to drop. We were going to get like, Elizabeth is my daughter, one of those deals, but we didn't get one of those. Instead, we got, it saddens me to witness this moment in your life, Elizabeth. Like, he's talking to Elizabeth. She's not there, dude. Crossing the Rubicon. I know this moment. I've seen the other side of that river. It's a place I never wanted you to go. The indication there is that he once was a good man or good person too, and made the conscious decision to cross that line and could never come back, could never make that decision go away. The choice that he made defined his future, which is not what he wanted for her. To me, the impression is at some point, and obviously it's a story we don't know yet because we've never heard it, is that he did something horrible. He made the conscious choice to do something horrible.
Yeah, because it wasn't his plan to put her on this path. Based on the choices he made and the insurmountable pain that it's caused Elizabeth.
I think that's why he's in her life, is because it's a debt. It's a debt he feels he owes. That's honestly, ultimately, whatever way you take it, that's the way that I'm taking it, is that it means that this, where he's at, is a debt that he feels he owes because of something horrible he has done.
And I like the way they shot it too, because it's, at first I was like, is he talking to Neville or is he talking to Elizabeth? Hoping that as he's talking to Neville, Elizabeth is hearing what he's saying. So that was a very interesting way to shoot that scene.
Yeah, I did too. It was good. And we end with Red in the hospital. And that was sad.
The makeshift hospital. The one his insurance actually covers.
The makeshift hospital. Exactly.
Not the one that Liz can find and blow up.
Well, that's the episode. I mean, anything else you want to talk about with Lake and Perillo? So it was nice to see Laverne Cox. I'm a fan of her, so that was cool. I love when we get a guest star you know pretty well. And if you didn't watch Orange is the New Black, prominent feature there.
I think the one thing that was interesting was Neville's line at the end to Rüdiger. As he's laying on the floor, he's like, you're part of the family now and I own you. Mm-hmm. So it's like, what is this family? Is there something bigger operation? Is he talking like mob-like family? Or are all the people that are part of his family, that like the butler guy and... what's her name that comes upstairs and gives him his medicine and turns off the light? Like, is this family mean something different to Neville? That's an interesting thing to play on.
Yeah. Is it the Godfather kind of family where it's like, hey, make an offer you can't refuse? Or is it the Fast and Furious kind of family? Which kind of family are we talking about? It's an important distinction.
Be interesting to find out as we go along.
All right. Well, want to take a second. We've got more show coming up, but we want to take a second and say thank you to those of you that support the show by going to Patreon. That's PATREON, patreon.com/theblacklistGSM. Special big thanks to our honorary blacklister, Patricia, as always. Also, special shout out to our task force members, Judy and Sharon, Rory, Karen, Bobby, Jens, and now Mary, all official task force members. All of these people receive cool gifts from us, and you can get a cool gift as well for donating at $20 level or higher. If you want a cool t-shirt or a coffee mug, you know you do. You don't have to stay at the $20 level forever, just a few months to get the cool gifts.
Yep, and then you can just step yourself on down to the $5 level so you still support the show, but you still get the cool benefits of getting the podcast before anybody else. That's right. The minute the show ends, the podcast is yours for $5 a month over at Patreon, patreon.com/theblacklistgsm. Fill the fedora, throw some bucks in the hat. Even if you can just give $2, one for me, one for Aaron, greatly appreciated. If everybody that listened gave us $2, we'd be doing this thing in video, in stereo, in high def. It'd be awesome.
And I often don't wear a shirt when I do the podcast. That's right. These guns are out. That's not true.
We want people to give us money, Aaron, not the other way around.
Nobody needs that. I'm so pale. You don't need that. The light! Oh, the light! Go to the light, Carolyn. Go to the pale man light.
Well, stick around. We got more great show, Red's Rhetoric, and Special Agent Intel coming up next.
Hey there, fellow podcast listener. Do you love video games but are tired of the negativity surrounding most podcasts?
Why not give The Gaming Outsider a try? We set ourselves apart from other video game podcasts by including our community and discussion on games as much as possible. And hey, we'll never charge you to be part of the show.
We pride ourselves on being an inclusive, family-friendly show while discussing industry news, the games we've been playing, and a weekly topic centered on gaming both new and old.
So check out The Gaming Outsider at the same location you're listening to this fine program, or check out our website, thegamingoutsider.com. And remember, there's no such thing as a bad game, just games that aren't for you.
Hey, Dembe Loyals, this is Hisham Taufik. You are listening to Blacklist Exposed on Golden Spiral Media.
All right, welcome to Red's Rhetoric, that part of the show where we listen to wise words from Red, and then you get to vote for your favorite in the weekly web poll inside the episode post on the website, theblacklistexposed.com. This week, our first clip comes when Red watches a dryer at a laundromat.
I once dropped acid with Allen Ginsberg. We spent a glorious afternoon in Soho. Just tumbling.
I know what you want, but I can't help you.
I miss that gentleness. You're a service provider, Bobby. I put you on the payroll to provide a service. Information on Townsend. You're laundering his money out of a laundromat, which is in itself entertaining, but I also know you're skimming off the top.
That's not true.
No, you're definitely stealing from Townsend. And while I admire your chutzpah, I can't help but think that if I know you're stealing from Townsend, it's just a matter of time.
Our second comes when Red talks about pain.
I think you enjoy the means too much to really care about the end.
I'm not talking about a medicine. I'm talking about a solution. An alteration in our DNA. Did you know the mole rat can't feel burning pain because it lacks the chemical substance P?
You want people to be like mole rats?
I want us to be impervious to pain.
What a terrible idea.
Spoken like someone who's never had his pain ignored. Who's never begged for relief and not gotten it.
I'd prefer to have my pain ignored than have no pain at all. Without pain, there can be no real pleasure. Without the lows, you have no way to measure the highs. If any part of your sadism in the name of science is designed to improve the human condition, making us unfeeling is absolutely the wrong way of going about it. Case in point, this is going to make killing you infinitely more pleasurable.
Which was your favorite this week? If you love tumbling, vote hashtag red acid. Or if you would take the pain for some pleasure, vote hashtag red rat.
Hashtag red rat. All right. Well, welcome to Special Agent Intel. This is where we talk about what you guys had to talk about or wanted to talk about. On last week's podcast, Deborah Kavanaugh said, "Oh my God, I'm agreeing with Aaron on Liz. Help me. Help me, Obi-Wan." You're welcome. Welcome to my life.
I think welcome. She does not want to agree with you, but she does. That's scary.
Nobody ever wants to agree with me, but sometimes right is right.
It is. Well, Kim Kavera said, "Hey, fellas, the Serenoid episode was great. Great to see advancement in contact technology. Mission Impossible contacts could make copies with a blink. Now it's FaceTime. Okay, I'll roll with that. The Toymaker character had some cool equipment as well. GPS glass eyeballs.
I just wish the post office had the cool technology or, you know, new passcodes.
Aaron added that part. Aram actually fired his weapon. It would seem he's getting more confident with his firearm, feeling less guilty about shooting or killing another human. That's character progress.
Oh, I want to interject one more time. But he should have shot Fake Keen in the face. Continue.
I need some clarity, though. I've read a lot of disgruntled posts about this season's storyline. Aaron, I'm trying to follow your advice. Ignore the promos and sneak peeks.
Yeah, welcome. Welcome aboard.
James Spader has been credited as executive producer on several episodes. I know that he's bigly invested into his character, Reddington. I've watched behind-the-scenes info and listened to episodes with commentary.
Wait, do you just continue after someone says bigly?
Yeah.
I can't with a straight face. All right. I like that when people make up words.
He's got a lot of input into Red's lines, and it's said always has good ideas. Is that where his executive producer status ends? Just on Reddington? ? Does he get to influence the direction of the rest of the show, or just specific episodes where Red has a major presence? I've read where executive producer is used as a resume bump for contract negotiations as well. Mm.
You or me on that?
Go ahead.
Okay.
You have thoughts?
Sure. Well, I mean, I know how the biz works. I know you do too. Executive producer is a lot of times when a star is giving credit, or producer or executive producer, and it's basically, think of it like an athlete, right? An athlete has bonuses tied into signing bonuses and that sort of thing. So they get more money that isn't directly attributed to their position, so they can, you know, get money different ways. Well, that's a way for a high profile actor to get a bump. So they basically link them to the show. They get higher residuals that way. It's how you can do contract negotiations. You give them a pay bump and they also get a little bit more of the show, a little piece of the show. So when it hits syndication or down the road, they're still getting paid for many, many, many years. You know, that's why, you know, Friends actors, they've got, I don't know if they were ever executive producers, but because they renegotiated, they got a bigger piece of the pie and they still get huge residual checks, which means after the show's off the air, they have plenty of money to live on. They don't have to work ever again. So that's essentially what that helps the actor do. In terms of influencing the direction, yeah, I think he's one of the few actors that have a direct influence on the character. I think they would listen to him. I don't think the overall mythology, but in terms of moments and things that happen to the character, I think he can greatly affect what happens.
Well, and James is also the one that knows the actual ending of the show.
Right? Yeah, he's one of the few.
So yeah, no, it's exactly that. It's like, here's your salary plus signing bonus, plus roster bonus, plus workout bonus, plus season bonus.
Workout bonus. 20 push-ups, $100.
She actually continues and has more. The final piece of the puzzle. Well, Troy, you aren't exactly wrong. Red loves puzzles. First season, Liz stabs him while he's doing a crossword. And while I couldn't tell, given Red's Cold War Soviet deep intel history, I'd bet that pen was a Fisher AG-7, same one NASA gives their astronauts. And with his stories, it probably belonged to one once. That's probably true. Red plays bananagrams with Dembe, puts puzzles together at his flat, one piece at a time, and is so good at chess, can walk by two fellas in the park and dictate the winning moves in seconds. He says,
yeah, I'm a big chess player. It does not work that smoothly, but
except for the Queen's Gambit.
Yeah. Well, if you can, but you have to observe it. Like, you can't just glance at it. You really have to observe the move.
And understand the board.
I was head of the chess club. I know how to play chess. I'm just saying. I was never Queen's Gambit level, though.
Well, Red says that he has contingencies for almost every situation. Mr. Kaplan knocked him down, and he figured out how to bounce back. While in prison, some of the help went astray, rocked Red's boat a little, and he corrected course. He's been able to predict the typical by-the-book responses of the law enforcement, dodging those raindrops without getting wet. He already knows how criminals think, but this time, Liz has knocked him off of his axis, and he's winging it with Cooper as well. He needs Liz and Cooper to finish his 30-year-old puzzle. Or does he? He doesn't have the time to manipulate or train a new FBI AD. Obviously, Rhett isn't going to die this season, but there's an urgency on his part to get past this obstacle with Liz, but yet so nonchalant about Liz wanting to kill him. I'm not really that curious about his plan. I'm more curious about what motivates him to stay. He was willing to leave her without the fulcrum. He was willing to leave her when she faked her death. He was going to leave when she took time off over dead Tom. Dead Tom, everybody. Round of applause.
Yep. Bye, Tom. Bye, you sucker.
He didn't leave after he found out Liz put him in prison. Far as she can tell, the only person left alive this plan matters to is Reddington himself. He can disappear anytime he wants. So why? Why so important to Liz if That's, he can just pick up and leave anytime at any season?
Why so serious? If we knew the answer to that, we'd know the answer to a lot of things, wouldn't we? I did love the dodging those raindrops without getting wet. I don't know why. I like that line. I just thought that was
cool.
Cool lining. Yeah, I don't know. I think that's the important part that we have to learn, right? Do you have any more thoughts, new thoughts, or same thoughts? Pretty much the same thoughts.
I don't know. Like, this season perplexes me at this point. Like, at first it was like, well, Katarina Theory dead. Right,
the Reddington. I feel like theory. They're being more direct this season than they
I do. Been. I feel like they're like, hey, we're finally just putting it out there. And yet you guys still don't believe it. But yeah,
they have said
very pointed. Very pointed.
Yes, very pointed. So interesting. Well, we'll see where we go.
He needs Liz for some reason. That's the only thing I can think of. There's something about Liz that he needs. Blood, her mind, her to take over. There's something about Liz that's still important.
I still think it's a debt. I think there's a debt that he feels he owes. Not necessarily he does owe, he feels he owes.
Right.
For some manner. Carell with some additional thoughts on Ogden Greeley. I thought that Anna should appear again because her character has not served any real purpose in the story so far. She's so pleasant, though. Since someone on the podcast spoiled that is the case, my idea for her is Liz identifying Anna and using her as leverage against Rhett. Yeah, and spoil it. Somebody else spoiled it. I was just reiterating that someone spoiled it. I don't know that for a fact because I haven't seen her and I don't look at the future episode listing. So I don't know that that's true. That's what someone told me, which made me feel like I was spoiled. thoughts on the Cyranoid. Love the episode and the concept. Well, you should take this because you agree with it.
Okay. One, I absolutely do not understand the plan with the Freelancer and Chemical Mary, like at all. Liz freed Freelancer so he would sabotage the plane so Liz could persuade Chemical Mary to put her in contact with Townsend. Mm-hmm. But in the end, Mary is locked up and threatened to help Liz. Mary says, get him here. My life depends on it. What was the point of freeing the Freelancer and sabotaging the plane? Liz could have just grabbed Mary and threatened her. The plane wasn't even needed. Alternatively.
And a big risk, too. A really big risk. Wild risk.
Alternatively, were the threats necessary because the plane did not crash and Liz couldn't prove her story about saving Mary? But that would require for Liz to want to crash the plane. Mary left the airport with Liz before the plane took off. Why was the sabotage of the planes even necessary? It seems so convoluted and ultimately pointless.
What? Are you saying that I totally agree with?
Number two, after the bomb, couldn't have known who was going to be in the room, wink, wink. The plane couldn't have known it would be saved.
Didn't need to know who was in the room. It was taking a concentrated blast chance. That's all that was. But anyway.
But she could have killed innocent people. The plane couldn't have known it would be saved. Again, could have killed innocent people.
That was a bigger one. I agree.
She ordered the murder of Mary. It seems silly that Liz should care about the life of the Cyranoid woman. She was a badass, by the way. So I think he's saying there that Liz is messed up.
Yeah. And I mean, does she really care about her? Because she kept putting her in danger and dropped her in the post office where she knew her face was going to be all over everything. She can't really escape after that point. It just seems like a really weird move for the actual woman to take.
Number three, we've been told now that Townsend's motivation is established as the loss of his family. But then he ordered the murder of his sister. I guess they mean his spouse, maybe his children, question mark.
Can I just stop you? We've all got siblings, right? Sometimes you pick and choose. It happens. Everybody's got favorites. I could probably name one
Aaron
or two.
Aaron just keeps putting hits out on more of the people that are closest to
him. They don't listen to this episode.
Number four. Liz is certainly moving up in the underworld. Her initial plans seemed easy to achieve for her. Get money, free the freelancer, hire a translator, hire a bounty hunter, find Mary. But now she seems to have info beyond what she could possibly have known from Red or from Skip. Red had to find the Cyranoids, and he did not know about Mary being Townsend's sister. Where is Liz getting this info from? Do all these shady people just start calling you up once you have money?
Yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Kind of.
It's like your car warranty.
It's kind of like your brother or your cousin. By the way, number five, thank you, Cooper. I understand that the task force is full of Liz's friends, but the defense based on she had it tough with Red, she did, but it just doesn't hold up. But they put people who has had bad, if not worse, behind bars all the time. I always remember the Djinn, literally forced into sex change operation and then shunned by his own father. He wanted to get revenge on his father and committed terrifying things to do it. And he was locked up by the task force. So glad Cooper put a stop to it after Mary's death, especially Aram's. You couldn't stop the warrant? After previous weeks, guys, how can you be okay with a drone strike on a traitor? Was just, man, stop it. Stop it.
I do wonder if you could make the Djinn today, in today's climate. You know what I mean? I feel like that would be a much dicier role for an episode now than it was then.
Because of Me Too or because of...
I just feel like, you know, society's continuously evolving, and it's a troublesome topic. So it just could be the way that was presented. It just could be very ugly at the, you know.
It's crazy to think that was 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It's a long time.
All right. Great thoughts. Great thoughts. And nothing that I really disagree with. I mean, I think we both pretty much agree. Look, I know Troy was a big fan of last week's. I wasn't. So I did not like a lot of the plot turns and twists. It didn't work for me overall.
I like the concept of the Blacklister.
I did too. I liked the
Russian implementation
wasn't so great.
Yeah. There's some of the writing might have been a little, but like the codes. How do you not change the codes after the floor is lava?
And the whole plane thing, I'll never understand that made sense. Because nobody can figure it out still. There's still people on Reddit trying to figure out exactly what that plan was because it's so convoluted.
I think it's what they said. Yeah. It's like, hey, Townsend, I saved your sister from a plane crash. That's why you should work with me.
Yeah, but that obviously wasn't a well thought out plan because he just wants her dead.
Right.
All right. So there's no name on this email, so we'll just call you C. Canterbury. I don't know why. That's what Troy said, so that's what we're going to do. First, we were so glad to find your podcast. It's thoughtful and well-reasoned. Thank you. Well, you are welcome. I think that's good enough. We don't really need to continue.
Thank you for listening.
I'll take the praise. No, as you said previously, Red can't live a normal life, but neither can Liz. That is part of why she has been so frustrated by not getting any answers. Damn, excuse me. She and Ted Tom. Bye, Tom. Tried to run away to Cuba for a normal life for Agnes. Personally, I'm glad they didn't make it. She has always been afraid for her daughter's safety and probably is afraid to have a normal relationship again. So no, I don't feel sorry for Red not having a normal life. He chose that, unlike Liz. I liked it. Unlike Liz. Even Dembe has repeatedly encouraged Red to give Liz answers. He sure the hell has, hadn't he? Second, just a partial list of the horrible things Red has done include killing Sam. God, thank you. Nobody ever wants to talk about that. He freaking just straight up killed him. Innocent guy dying in his bed.
It was a mercy killing.
Bullshameel. It wasn't mercy. Sam didn't want to die. Sam was cool living.
Sam was going to die anyway.
He was a mercy killing. And boy, I sure went out of here. Not with Sam. Sam's just like, can you get your hand off my mouth and pillow off my mouth? Get away from me. I'd like to breathe. That's not mercy killing. Liz's adoptive father, by smothering him before she could say goodbye, trying to kill Mr. Kaplan and killing Liz's mother. This is a lot for one person to take. He also consistently kills other people as he deems necessary. Thanks for noticing. Based on the fact that even faking her own death didn't get her out from under Red Shadow, I can see where the writers would not have Liz go to an island with the money. Red would eventually find her there. However, starting with the 16 Ounces episode, I felt the writers did not portray her character correctly. She's a loving mother and friend. Ruin is one of my favorite episodes. I'm with you. Liz is clever, and she would have found another way that did not involve innocent people possibly getting hurt. That is too large a departure from her character. I was always a Keenler fan and would still love to see them together. So my hope now is that either Liz and Wrestler and or Liz and Skip is awesome, will fall in love and join forces, finding some creative, safe place to raise Agnes and have a lovely life together. Liz and Agnes both deserve that. Finally,
for the record, I'm sorry, how is Skip awesome? We saw him twice.
Yeah, I'm not on board the Skip is awesome train, but hey, it's your letter. So, but I do like that. Liz and Wrestler being able to run off and da-da-da-da. And I agree, that didn't seem like the character that's been written so far, that whole plane thing. But I agree with Ruin. Yeah, everybody says Cape May. No, Ruin's my favorite. I said it. Finally, I wish NBC would remove or hide the bullying comments made about Liz Keene's character. I don't understand why people are so cruel and unkind. I also think in this season's episodes, Red's character should speak warmly of Liz as he has done many times in past seasons. Perhaps if Red has her back like when they were on the run together, the viewers who like to insult her would get behind her since the ones who speak the loudest love Red so much. Red's character reminds me of the many times in history where, just because someone is charming, they can get away with murder. People aren't discerning and get swept up in the charm. I don't agree with that they should remove comments, because it's about a character. Now, the ones made about Megan, yes, I 100%. I'm so sick of that. You know, I just don't like when people do anything and make it personal. You know, if it's about the character or the writing or something like that, okay, but never attack anything personally. If you want to be critical, fine. Attacking, always wrong.
But this writer's definitely not wrong. If Red is like, Liz is amazing. Liz is the greatest thing since sliced bread. All of a sudden, everybody loves Liz. The minute Red's like, Liz is trash and I'm going to kill her and she put me in prison. And all of a sudden, like, yeah, screw Liz. Go, you know, string her up. However Red goes is how the audience goes.
That's their favorite character. For many people, that's their favorite character in the show. It's the reason why they watch it. So I understand that happens. And just like Liz is a favorite character for people. So it's just part of watching TV. It just sometimes people get too passionate about it. I mean, I've seen people where they're making the case that, you know, like Red is basically a real person or something. I'm like, he's not. He's not. I promise you, he's not a real person.
Except for that one time when we were on set, remember? And then James walked in full costume.
Yeah, he kind of took a step back
and we were like, oh, wait. It's like, oh, wait, no, that's just James.
maybe he doesn't know that he's not Red. Maybe Red is real. I mean, this is a documentary. I didn't know this the whole time. And lastly, Red has murdered so many people on this show, and Harold Cooper has nice sit-down coffee chats with him, but has decided to put an arrest warrant out for Liz. Ridiculous. Also, consider Park beating a man almost to death and Wrestler killing Laurel Hitchin. There's an arrest warrant for Liz. Well, to be fair, Cooper doesn't know about those two things. Right? He doesn't know about
Wrestler killing. Park beating the man.
He doesn't know about Wrestler killing Laurel.
Cooper probably knows, but he doesn't know,
But, you know, it's what you know that you know. You know?
And
I'm trying to
remember the Hitchin one, if Cooper knew about that or... I don't think he did. I thought Wrestler turned in his resignation at one time, and then Cooper said, no, it's all good. Because if you turn in yours, I have to turn in mine, too.
I don't know if that was... I don't know. Oh, I don't know.
That was a long time ago, too.
I am totally Team Liz. I hope her life, which was so dramatically upended by Red, here, can be a life that lets her smile and wear lovely, bright-colored outfits again. Wear a nice dress, go out on the town with Wrestler or Skip. You really got a Skip thing, huh? And enjoy life, Liz. Everyone in my family misses Liz as a consistent character. I'm with you. I miss Liz quite a bit. And I do miss the times when they were together and smiling and being warm. But I think that time has passed. And I still, contrary to what many people tell me, I believe it's Red's fault. It's Red's fault that we got to this point. Well, not necessarily the decision she's making. I'm just saying that we got to this point, still say it's Red's fault.
It's also dependent on the timing of the schedule, right? Because which half of the season is Liz with Red and which half of the season is Liz against Red?
Yeah. But, I mean, a lot of that is writing, too. I mean, they're trying to make something that lasts for many, many years, it makes it difficult. Understood, you know. But yeah, I still say a lot of it is his own doing. So it's hard for me, you know, why everybody tells me, poor Red. I'm like, I don't poor Red any of it. It's still on him, a big portion of it.
It's true.
A lot of that could be solved if you just explain the situation. Hey, and lastly, we have this email from Big Pyre. A cool name. He says, hey, doing a great job. Thank you, sir. I'm enjoying the direction of Liz. It feels like finally the real Liz and no turning back. The task force is in doubt with this. The off-screen boon gives a chance to gradually develop a new direction for the format. Spader could do this show for years, shuffling things around. Aging Red, bad Liz, disbanded task force. I could watch that. You're right. I think that sounds great. Maybe that's where we're headed. Who knows? Stay tuned.
Overall, though, favorite one of season 8 so far? Since the Katarina killing?
Yeah, since Liz left the show, yeah, I would say. Yep. Since Liz has gone on the run, yes, this is probably my favorite. I mean, I liked the first 4 episodes. I thought they were invigorating. And then, you know, I think you and I have talked about that. I don't like this whole Liz being a constant point. Although this week, she wasn't, and the episode was better for it. Because they weren't trying to communicate with Liz Keen via a doppelganger.
Space satellite.
Just odd. But that's the end of this episode. Thanks, everybody, for listening. By the way, there is no podcast for March 19th because of
they're off. There's no show for March 19th.
Yep, there's no show. And the following week, I will be off. So it'll just be Troy and Rory's coming by. So thank you ahead of time, Rory. I appreciate you doing that. And that's going to conclude this discussion. So now is the time to recommend The Blacklist to your friend, your enemy, your frenemy, or your neighbor. And when you do, please recommend they listen and subscribe to the Blacklist Exposed podcast. All the case profiles can be found at theblacklistexposed.com and everywhere great podcasts can be heard.
Hey, you can just strap them to their chair and then give them some of that paralysis juice and they have to watch all 7 seasons in one sitting. Just give them a little bit of the antidote occasionally, just in case.
I like it. Just keep it handy.
More great Aaron and Troy hijinks. Follow us on your favorite social media outlet. I'm at Troy Heinrichs on Twitter. He's at Aaron Smirks. And together we are at The Blacklist GSM. Talk about the show, the podcast, or your favorite Spanish Inquisition torture device.
That reminds me. When Dembe's like, hey, Perillos, what exactly did you give Red? If I'm her, I'm like, I would just point to the easiest thing I had on the table. I'm like, oh, that. Mm-hmm. That's what you gave me? Yeah, it's exactly what I... Oh, that's so painful. Ouch. All right, big thanks for listening. Don't forget to answer our profiling question. What's your score of the season so far from 1 to 5? And we will have a poll as well, I'm sure, in our Facebook group and maybe on Twitter. So that'll help you decide. But we're just kind of wondering, like, what's your score? 1 to 5. 5 being the best.
Well, everybody have a great week off. Enjoy the weather as spring is approaching. Don't forget to set your clocks ahead. If you're listening to this before Sunday, if you are listening to this after Sunday, you missed the boat. Fast forward 1 hour and then the show will be over and you'll be all set.
Oh, that's right. Spring forward, right?
Spring forward.
Yeah, we're losing an hour.
At least here in the States. I don't know how it works around the rest of the world. The rest of the world's probably smarter than us.
Can we agree that whole thing is done? Like, we should just stop doing that,
right? We
should
totally stop doing it.
Wait, come on. People are like, we've been doing it forever. Well, we've done a lot of things forever. We shouldn't do those either. Come on.
We've worked from home for a year, so we don't have to go back to the office either.
We haven't had answers on The Blacklist in forever. We should get solutions to that, too. Let's just change things. Let's make some choices.
Isn't that what they always said? The only constant is change.
We should change that. All right. Take care, guys.
See ya. Until next time, I'm Agent Troy Heinrichs. That's at Troy Heinrichs on Twitter. And if you want to learn more about me, just visit, about.me/Troy Heinrichs.
And I'm Agent Aaron Peterson. You can hear me talking about movies and TV on the Hollywood Outsider podcast, as well as Remake This Movie Right. We are available at thehollywoodoutsider.com or on Twitter at 5Popcorn. Be sure to subscribe, download the app, submit your feedback, but most importantly, keep yourself off of
The Blacklist.
The Blacklist Exposed is a Golden Spiral Media production. Find more of our great podcasts at goldenspiralmedia.com/podcasts.
Thanks for joining us yet again for number 70 on the Blacklist, Dr. Lakin. Oh, shit. Is it Lakin? Thanks for joining us yet again for number 70 on the Blacklist, Dr. Lakin Perilos. Who? Perilos. Damn it. Thank you for yet again.